Hi, everyone, and welcome to Raising Remarkable Teenagers today on Tuesday Tips for Parents of Teens. And today we've got our lovely guest, Nelly Harden. And Nelly is a family and life and leadership coach who helps parents to eliminate the power struggles with their daughters, especially, and to help them grow into confident, wise and respectful young women. I mean, those women who are ready for the world. So welcome today, Nelly. If you can just, again, I know I've introduced you a little bit, but if you can just tell us a little bit about yourself before we dig into the four facets of this program.
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. And my name is Nelly Harden. So I am a wife of 21 years coming up, and I'm a mother of four daughters myself. So my daughters are 12. I have twins that are 14, and I have a 17-year-old too. She just turned 17. So it's weird to say I have a 17-year-old, but I do. And yeah, so I have a background in biology and psychology, and I've been working in, I started my career in animal work and behavior, and then I transitioned to human work a bit over a decade ago, and I've been working with families in disciplines and habit forming, and specifically in work with families with young daughters for a while now, in order to help them, like you were saying, equip them with all those facets really of mental wellness before they leave home, so that the foundation that they have something that they can lean on, launch from, and stand on for the rest of their life, because that foundation is really built during the first 6,570 days, which is how many days are in 18 years. And so, you know, I always say we don't kick them out on their 18th birthday by any means, but that is really about the time that we have our high impact, high influence time zone with them. After that, we're more consultants and even friends and things like that. But during the 65-70, that is our training ground for life. And so, yeah, that's what I work on with parents.
Oh, brilliant. What a beautiful, beautiful introduction. So one of our values here at Raising Remarkable Teenagers is being intentional.
Right.
Now, loads of our listeners, all you lovely parents out there, you like to hear different descriptions of what being intentional is. I know we have talked about what's being intentional, but the reason we bring in guests, different guests, is to come up with a different, you know, just a different ways of describing what being intentional is. So to ask you, Nelly, in your view, what would you say being an intentional parent is?
Well, I think to be intentional with everything, with anything, you need to know what time zone you're talking about, like what time period you're talking about. And I say that because when we really started being intentional with our parenting, it was over a decade ago. And so, you know, my dad passed away when I was really young. I was only one when he passed away. And then my husband had cardiac issues and had to have heart surgery in 2010. And we really weren't sure if he was going to make it or not. We had gone through all these procedures, all these medications and all of this. And, you know, we were just unsure. And at that time, our kids were 4, 2, 2 and under one when he had heart surgery. And so going through that, and then he made it. He's still here. We've been married 21 years, like I said. But again, going through that, and 5 weeks after that, we almost lost one of our twins, one of our girls, in a drowning accident. Yeah. And so those two events, really close to one another, really helped us. You know, they were terrible, but out of terrible things, great things can arise too. Mm-hmm. And it really helped us. Okay, we know that we are not guaranteed our time here. We want to make sure that the time that we do have here is being is being intentional. We are building something. We are moving towards something. We're not just spending our day. We're investing our day. And we knew also that this time that we have in our child's lives is in this role that we have, this parenthood childhood dynamic, is fleeting. And then they will be adults. And what are they going to have that they can hold on to for the rest of their lives and use in hard times, use in good times, right? Are we going to teach them how to laugh and find the joy in the crevices and be able to have courage going into hard situations and problem solve and all these things? And so we really started living very intentionally for our own family. And then that prospered into helping other families do the same. But yeah, so intention for us was really, okay, we know we're not guaranteed this time. These are the things that we want to accomplish with them and for them before they leave home. Mm-hmm. Let's start today, right? In order for that to happen, in, 4,000 days from now, this is where we're going to start today with that. And it wasn't huge. It wasn't, big that we did every single day. It was just another step forward and another step forward. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh, wow. I heard a lot of tragedy there, but out of it looks like it refocused you. It gave you perspective. And I would say it jumped you into, oopsie, we cannot just parent by default.
Right.
We got to design this. And that's one of the things I like it here, because loads of parents, and if you're listening for the first time, we like to say that on here, we are intentional parents who want to raise our young people by design, not by default. So I like the way you said and the stories that you've given us, Nelly, there. So, and I'm excited to continue chatting with you, because not only have you got those personal experiences, but what I can also hear is you're working with parents as well, and also you've got some sort of qualification coming from animals and then into human beings, and that's behavior behavior strategies. So I want to ask you something, because one of the things that stops us from progressing, one of the things that stop us from advancing, and it's the same thing that stops us from growing, are the beliefs we hold within ourselves. And this, as I always say, this is not a shame or blame or guilt session. So we are learning, and it's in learning that we grow and we do better. So if you feel like, oh my God, I haven't done that. Oh my God, that, it's the train hasn't left. You can jump in right now. So I'd like you to address a couple of beliefs that keeps parents stuck into what I would say, redundant parenting strategies, things that don't work, but because they don't know anything else to do, they just carry on. What kind of beliefs do you come across when you're working with parents?
Well, there's a number of them. I mean, down to core beliefs that they're bringing in from childhood, beliefs that they have about themselves. But there's really three that I kind of wanted to address here. And one of them I run across a lot, and it's of no fault to anybody. It's just that we don't know better at the beginning, right? And so that is, as long as they are doing well in school, they are good, right? So many parents think as long as they're doing well in school, then they are good. All the boxes are checked. And, that's because, if you think about it, we know something is good or not good by how it is measured. And the measurable that we have with our kids, if they are in school, is a report card or, grades. And so if that grade says, A, B, even C, whatever that grade says, then that grade is assigned for their entire life. not just how they did on a couple of tests, right? And it, you know, it can go both ways. If they're doing terrible in school, that means that they're doing terrible. If they're doing well in school, that means they're doing well, is the false sense that we have. And when you think about it, you know, I work with families on, like I said, confidence, all of the sides of respect and all of the sides of wisdom. There's really four sides to wisdom. There's academic, sure. There's practical though, like how you're going to do things, how you think, how you make decisions, right? There's also self wisdom, knowing yourself and how you're feeling, how you're thinking, what to do with that, and others, right? Interpersonal. So when you think about it, if you are just assigning how they are doing because of a report card, because of this key indicator, if you will, then you are missing out on huge, huge swaths of their life. Because you're just saying, oh, if they're good, you know, if they're good here, then they're good everywhere. And you're also might be missing out on, you know, an epidemic that's happening with our kids these days, which is perfectionism. So they might be doing really, really well in school, but that could be exactly what's wrong, right? That they're doing so well because they're pushing themselves with perfectionism and its first cousin of comparison. And that is a problem that's happening and it's right below your eyes, but you're not seeing it because of that key indicator of a report card. So that's definitely one that I would say is a big belief bubble that, that needs to be burst with a lot of.
I know that is, you know, that is so amazing because I meet so many parents, exactly what you've said, that if they're doing okay in school, then we're good.
Yeah.
And the truth is, most of the time, like what you said, there's perfectionism. But even worse, what I see is, you know, that the ability to parrot, you know, like you're just regurgitating what you've been told. You're regurgitating. So what does that say about your actual ability to be critically evaluative of the information, right?
Right.
So because a lot of academics, as we all know, it's you are told this, as long as you can repeat it in an exam, then you're correct. But that is no indicator of any sort of emotional intelligence. But I want you to move on to the other two because I think our listeners really want to hear this, right?
Yeah. And you're very right there. I've, you know, dealt with some people that have the photographic memory and how they actually are thinking, that critical thinking is missing there. So the second one I wanted to touch on is as long as they graduate high school, then they are ready for life. As long as they graduate high school, then they are ready for life, whether that means college, whether that means, you know, college, university, work or whatever that means for them. As long as, you know, they hit this age marker, it means therefore they are ready. But when you think about it, I mean, think about driving. I think that's such a great parallel here. Just because your child turns 16 or whatever age they are when they can do that, are you just going to hand over keys to your car? No, like they have to learn how to drive, right? That's they have to learn the rules. They have to learn what to do in certain situations. Mm-hmm. They have to have practice. They need to have guidance, right? And so just like that, when they turn 18 or when they graduate high school, it doesn't mean that they are ready for life. If they haven't had the experiences, the teaching, the guiding, the problem solving, you know, if this happens, then we do that. If they haven't had that, then they are not ready. And so we really have to invest a lot more than just survival, a lot more than just a good grade into our kids in order to get them life ready. Because back when I worked in the animal kingdom too, the entire purpose of childhood is to get them ready for adulthood. That's and adulthood right. does not just mean an A on a test or I passed, you know, I graduated high school. It means so much more than that. So
absolutely. And I love what you said about you won't hand your keys just because your kid just turns, for example, here in the UK, they can start driving at 17, but we don't have, my daughter, she's 16 and she got her driver's license. The learners, like, mm-hmm. she couldn't wait like 3 months before she was 16. I'm not going to hand her the car now. No, not even in another year, right? Because not only, even if they think they know, there is a practice period as well. And then also, as you and I know, our young people's brain executive function mm-hmm. is not fully developed. So some of the decisions they'll make, including not even thinking about consequences, they can end up hurting themselves or other people because of that. So they need to not only exercise those executive functions, but keep on exercising them, because remember, we are helping them develop those habits, you know, the different habits of thinking and being, right? So right. Even though we have told them what is right or what is wrong and all that, when it comes to skills development, it takes practice. It's like a muscle, right? All of us were yep. born with muscles, right? But until we exercise them, until we put them to work, you don't see them, right? But they are there, right? So that's what I wanted to say. So if we can move on to the third one, that would be amazing, amazing, amazing.
Yeah. And it kind of ties in with that too. So, you know, our brains are not fully, fully, fully developed until mid 20s, but there is a full rebuild that happens, or initial build that happens 3 times in our lives. In utero for the first time, when our brain mm-hmm. is literally being built, mm-hmm. happens again during toddler years, and it happens again during teen years. Mm-hmm. And then it finally stops developing. We're always making connections and things, but at around 25, 26 years old. Yes. So to your point, when they're trying to make decisions and have that thinking, how they thought yesterday is going to be different than how they thought today, because their brain is literally under construction. And so that goes along with my third point here. Mm-hmm. And that is this myth that if my child has a problem, they will come to me,
oh,
right?
Gosh, please. So, please talk about that, Nelly. Talk about that.
Yes. So twofold here, you're assuming that if they have a problem, you are going to be the person they come to, right? Mm-hmm. But you're also assuming that if they have a problem, they're going to go to someone, right?
Or even they'll know.
Right. That's my point. And so this is where you have to be a proactive parent here, and you have to get out there and be the one that is having the conversations, asking the questions, not the yes, no questions. You're not accepting fine as an answer, right? And you're actually diving deep. And if there's a problem with that, and if you have some walls that you're hitting with that, then, you know, even using a simple tool like, tell me 2 things that happened at school today, mm-hmm. right? Can you tell me 2 ways that you are feeling right now? Or can you tell me 2 things, right? 2 or 3, don't go above 3. Don't just do 1, right? 2 or 3. And so you can actually start these conversations. And the more conversations you have, the more trust will be built. And then the more connection will be built too, right? We have truth and trust between ourselves as parents and children. And that's what we're trying to build toward, right? And so the more of those communications that we can have, the better that you would be able to have that. And so teaching them mental wellness, because kids do what we do, not what we say, right? So teaching them mental wellness through what we are doing mm-hmm. and mental, you know, there's worldwide talk. We had a big dose of it, you know, we in the US this week too, there's worldwide talk about mental illness, right? Mm-hmm. But that's a reactive approach. We want to be proactive with our kids and teach them mental wellness before we have to deal with mental illness.
Well, right? Yeah.
And it's not always going to be 100% effective. We are still going to have mental illness, but think about it. If they have the toolbox for what to do with mental wellness, then they're going to be much better in mental illness. And so with that, approach your kids, ask the questions, ask the hard questions, have the hard conversations. Nobody ever said parenting was easy. Nobody ever came up to you and said, oh yeah, you just need to talk about rainbows and unicorns and read them a book when they're three and you're good. It's a lot. It's more, it's so much more than survival. It's so much more than making them cookies after school, right? It's a hard road being a parent, but we are in, our job is to build people. And that's why I call parents architects, family architects, because we literally build, design, and plan the beginning of someone else's life. And if our job is to build them, and during the first half of childhood, we're building for them. During the second half, we're building with them, right? We're partnering with them to help them build who they are. But if that's our job, then we need to take our job seriously and do that. And taking it seriously can mean, you know, having, you know, dance parties in your kitchen. It can mean so much fun and joy. It does not have to be serious all the time, but sometimes it does. And we have to take those times too.
Wow. Wow. What, you know, like that last belief, right? It's so big. It is so big. In fact, as an adolescent psychologist, one of the, you know, most pressing issue is mental health problems.
Right.
And a lot of mental health problems are caused by experiences we have been through, but we have been unable to process. And why are young people not being able to process this? Because we as parents, we as families, as teachers, as educators, we're not giving them that safe space to speak. Like what you said, Nelly, they need to feel, to start having those conversations, have those conversations, but they need to trust us to be able to have those conversations. And what I usually say, and you said it so rightly, is our young people, I tell my community this, our teenagers are like pressure cookers, literally. Mm-hmm. If you put a kid in, you know, in our imaging, imaging devices, you see what's happening in their brain and their body? They are simmering and boiling. There's so much brain activity. Like you said, at this age, there's so much brain activity, right? And what happens is, I and most of you have heard this, me give this analogy. Imagine a pressure cooker, right? So it's got everything simmering, boiling, you know, a lot is happening inside it. Now, if you don't want that, whatever it is, to break, what do we do? Everyone, and most of us, especially mothers, we know that our pressure cookers have this little something at the top of it. And we open it, and what do? We let out a little bit of pressure. We let out a little bit of pressure so that our food, our cooking thing doesn't burst and break, right? So it is with our young people, with our teenagers. Our job as parents is to provide that safe space to speak, because every time you give them a chance to open up a little bit, they let out something. They let out something. And in doing so, we can't protect them from their brain activity. We can't protect them from the hormones running wild. We can't do that, because that's biology, that's psychology happening within their body. But what we can do is provide those safe opportunities for them to let out, to let out, to let out. And in doing that as well, what we know is that when they speak, there's a clarity that happens in the brain. And there's a levering that happens in the brain, and it stops them from, you know, sometimes they have perceptions that are actually not real and they're imagined.
Exactly,
So when we do that, we give them that opportunity to process, what we call to process. In fact, when we also do that, that is a way of developing a resilience, because they speak about it, and then they process it, they discover, actually, what I was thinking was not actually the truth about the whole thing, right? And then as you have a conversation back and forth, you guys know when we go, when especially those ones of you who are in our mentoring programs, you know, we go deeper and talk about how how the brain and the neurons are developed as we have conversations, and the widening of our circuits, right? So I love what you said about having those conversations. And parents, as parents, I mean, I've had many situations when daughter, things happened to her, and I was never the first person to be told. It was her friends. Her friend said to her, I think you need to speak to your mom about that, right? And then she would come and speak to me. I'm not always the first one to be spoken to, but here is the thing. From when she was a little younger, I said to her, you must learn to speak out, tell someone, even if it's not me, it doesn't have to be me. I don't have ownership of everything you're feeling. Because when we do that, we give them permission to share with other people who they feel safe, right? And what's the most important thing is for them to talk, right? Not necessarily to you. And as parents, and also as leaders, because parents, I always say parents are leaders. It's okay if they're not telling you what it is. It would be nice to be told. It would be nice to be the first one. But we should be thinking in terms of their wellness, not our own ego, right? So you just blew my mind over there. I wasn't even planning to talk about this neuro stuff. but I am, you know, this is just blowing my mind as you speak. So I want to ask you about, I know you talked about being an intentional parent and how you came to do this work. I just want to ask you, when you were younger, is there something you felt, were there opportunities and times you felt like you wanted to express yourself, but no one was listening, or you felt aggrieved? And because of this, you've come to a point where you want to give that platform to young people. For example, one of the reasons I'm so passionate about allowing young people to speak and to express themselves is because when I was growing up, I felt unheard, unlistened, unvalued. But do you know, every one of us has that life flowing through us, and we want to express ourselves. And then it's constricted. And when it's constricted, you know, you feel, and that's why I'm very, so I would like you to tell us if there was any, I mean, it's not pressure, but most people have had those moments. Do you have any of that, whether when you were younger or in an adolescent or younger person?
Yeah, absolutely, hands down. So, yeah, growing up, and especially when I was going through my tween and teen years, which is second half of childhood, I'm talking like 9, 10 to 18. I actually left home when I was 17. I graduated high school a little bit early for my age, and I started college when I was 17. But yeah, when I was in middle school and high school, I did, and I will say I still do, which is more evidence toward what the work I do, but have worth issues, right? Am I worth having this, you know, having this friend? Am I worthy of, you know, this work, this calling? And when I just went to a high school that was much higher socioeconomically than I was growing up, I'll just put it that way. And so I always felt like I was less than, right? And I also happened to go to school with a bunch of people that went off to like Ivy League schools. I ended up going to, you know, just a, it was a great school. I went, but I just went to a, you know, a regular school, quote unquote, compared to all of these Ivy League, you know, Harvard, all these, you know, big places. And then those people went on to become CEOs by the time they were 25. And so, and I was not. So I definitely had a lot of these worthiness issues, but what happened and what was so important is that I did not have confidence. And what happens when you don't have confidence, it means you are chasing worth all the time. Mm-hmm. And so anything that will give you a drop of worthiness, you're like, ooh, that's shiny. They think that I'm worthy. They think that I'm good enough. So I'm going to chase this, even if it's a terrible, not great place to go. Right. In fact, and I will just say this too. There was a woman I worked with a while ago, and she actually had a home for rescuing women out of sexual slavery in the world. And she happened to be on an airplane one time, and this is her life's work, right? This is what she does. And she was sat next to this, what she thought was this wonderful gentleman, super nice and everything. And a couple hours into the flight, after they've been talking, she asks him, oh, so what do you do? And it turns out that he owns one of the world's largest pornographic studios. And that's what he does his work with. But she was like, well, this is the work that I do. And so they had a very interesting, very raw conversation. Mm-hmm. But she asked him, how do you find these women that are okay with this? And his answer was, it's easy. I just find girls with daddy issues from their childhood. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's all about worth. It comes down to that worth. And so it is very important to me because I went off to college and, you know, things happened and there was a long, decades long of struggle and healing that came from that for me. And so when I want to make sure our young women are equipped with that confidence from within before they leave home, so they're not out chasing their worth somewhere else.
Wow. You know, when you said that, it just reminded me that today on my social media, I shared a statistic. And I like to share statistics because I'm as a scientist, as a psychologist, but also as a parenting coach, I like to bring that research from the books, from academia, and bring it to the public and share it with my soul, with my smile, in a way that all of us, regular people, all of us, including myself as a mother, can understand, like simple strategies. So today I shared a recent statistic that 40% of our teenagers are lonely. 40%, and we're not talking about orphans. We're talking about a family, my family, your family. So this is how bad it is because, for example, between me and you, Nelly, one of our kids is lonely, right? Yeah. And most parents don't know this. They don't even know how to identify this loneliness. And what we find is teenagers who are lonely are very vulnerable. Those are the ones that are targeted for sexual exploitation, drugs exploitation, crime exploitation. And those are the same ones who have a lot of mental health difficulties, right? So when you talked about having those issues of not self-worth, because what happens in teenage years, because there's a dissonance, because they're just coming up from being children. And what we know is they suffer something we call, it's like a grieving process, because you're leaving behind, you know, what you've known, the security of being a little child who everyone adored. And now you're in this stage where you're expected to shape up, to keep up, to take on more responsibilities for which you have no skills for. So in that period, they feel so lonely. And then remember, I talked about what's happening in their brains and their bodies. So they are feeling strange. And the problem is they think they are the only one going through that. And exactly. That's where the loneliness comes in. And that's why, again, it's so important, so important that we connect with our young people so that we know, we get into their world, we get to know what's happening, we get to feel them, we get to feel their heart, we get to affirm them as worthy human beings. And again, to come back to what you said, Nelly, about us not just focusing on what they're doing, their academic, we're thinking in terms of you as a person. You are worthy, even without that grade card. You are worthy, even when your room looks like trash. You are worthy, even when you've just had breakfast and you stood up and left your, and I'm looking at you and thinking, surely you've just finished breakfast. You should know that you put that cup and that bowl in the dishwasher, right? So it's up to us to remind them they are worthy as human beings, because we are human beings and not human doings. And the big mistake that as parents sometimes we make is that we don't remind or affirm our young people as worthy human beings unless they have done something.
Right.
Right. And oh my God, I want you to repeat what that gentleman said from his own mouth, because what I usually say to people, this for us is research, right? This is This is the person that does that work. They are telling you, this is what we look for. This is how we prey on your kids.
Yep.
So yep. Please, can you just repeat what the person said? Because I want to hear this.
And right there, he said, it's really easy to find. I mean, he was just like, it's so easy to find them. We just find girls with daddy issues from their childhood. And that's it. And you know, I don't think it's just daddy issues, it's moms too, but it is, it comes down to worth. It comes down to a girl that doesn't have self-worth. We're going to dangle a carrot in front of her and say, hey, you're really pretty. I think that you're worthy over here. And she's going to chase it, because if you don't have confidence, you chase your worth. And that is, it's sad. It's very sad. And I never want young women leaving home without that as part of their foundation.
And you know, and I want to remind all of us here, as obviously most of you guys listening, you know, I've worked with young people from all sorts of classes of people. And I can tell you, none of us, no family is invincible. Mm-mm. None of us is invincible. Of course, for confidentiality reasons, there's so much I cannot share, but I can tell you, I have seen some high power people's kids in prison. I have seen them suffering detrimental mental health problems. I have seen them peddling drugs in crime. So don't sit there and think, oh, that happens to those, you know, to those bad families or those poor families. No.
Right.
None of us is invincible. I've got my own stories as well. most of the people here, especially those in the mentor, you've heard some of the stories, and including my own daughter, you know, me having to take her to the general practitioner because I didn't know what to do with her. And people would expect me to know what to do with her. But again, as parents, we must be willing to get support,
right,
and not think that I know all the answers. You would expect me to have known all the answers for my daughter. And to be honest, I knew what to do, but I wasn't the right person for her.
Yeah.
So we have to be willing to seek support. If you have to go to Nelly, don't just suffer in silence. Look for a coach, look for a mentor, look for a mental health practitioner. There is no shame in seeking support. In fact, the greatest leaders the greatest leaders have a group, they have a cluster of supporters around them. So, and you as a leader, as a parent, right? Think about some of the greatest athletes. They've got coaches, right? They would say, oh, I don't need, I'm good. I've got talent. I've got everything. I don't need a coach. But then you don't improve, right? So, wow, this conversation is making me feel hot, Nelly. And I'm excited.
Yeah. So, well, I think I just want to say here too, and it goes along with that, because, you know, you've heard before, if you have to go see a psychiatrist or a psychologist and things like that, you know, if you have a broken bone, you go and get it fixed. And if you, you know, have something broken, you go and get it fixed. But I would even say, you know, to your point with coaches and mentors, I equate that with physical therapy, right? If you have some ongoing issue, or you want to prevent an ongoing issue, right? You go to the chiropractor, you go to the physical therapist, you go and you have that ongoing support around you. Mm-hmm. And if you want to take physical wellness seriously, physical wellness is so easy to see and check the box or yes or no. Mental wellness, you have to do the same thing. You have to do the same thing.
And I like what you said earlier about being proactive.
Yes.
The problem we have when we are reactive, especially when it comes to mental wellness, sometimes it's too late.
Right.
And who, none of us got our children so that we can watch them suffer, so we can watch ourselves feeling helpless. No, we don't want to feel helpless. We don't want to feel hopeless. And that's why this, for example, what we are having here, Nelly and I, and you guys are listening, this is the village we need to raise remarkable teenagers. This is the village. The stuff that we talk about here, we're talking about intentional, just knowing, connecting, truth, trust. And no one taught us that. When we were growing up, they mostly parented us by default, right? It just happened. But, you know, we are dealing with complex issues today, right? A lot of complex issues, of course, including technology and, you know, and so much competition, so much comparing, right? And as you can imagine, the teenage years is already very impressionable and also very sensitive. So if we don't do what Nelly is saying about reminding your kid that they are valued, they belong, they are worthy, and not because they've done something, but because they are who they are, because they are life. Right, there's a poem, I don't know, Nelly, I don't know if you know this poem by Khalil Gibran, I like it. It says, our children are not our children. They are the product of life wanting to express itself.
I love that.
Yeah, they came through us, but they don't belong to us, right? We can drop that poem down here. It's just, if you read through it and understand, you will fall in love with your kid, like literally, because you want to support them to express themselves just as life intended for them to be. So Nelly, as we come to almost the end of our session today, I want to ask you, because over here, we've talked you know, very profound information, very, you know, inspiring stuff, very empowering information. I want to talk about self-care for parents, right? And what I would like is to hear some practical tips as self-care for ourselves, because as you and I know, it's impossible to fill someone else's cup when yours is empty, right?
Right, then, right.
What suggestions, what tips, what strategies, what great information have you got to share with us?
Well, a couple of things here. So I think for self-care, like for me, especially a morning routine, having a morning routine where you can wake up and you can prepare for the day ahead. Mm-hmm. And then you are taking on the day isn't taking on you. Right. And
what did you say? That was good, guys.
This
guys, we need to write this down because I am writing it and I didn't quite catch it.
I said, you are taking on the day. The day isn't taking on you.
Oh, right? We love that.
But, and that goes with, we in the teachings that I do and the work that I do, we really help families all together live from the inside out, right? Mm-hmm. So that means you are waking up in the morning and saying, oh, how can I affect the world today? Not waking up in the morning and being all nervous and having anxiety going, how is the world going to affect me today? Right. Mm-hmm. And so, if you have that morning routine and have it be something that is habitual and it can be 15 minutes, I'm going to be honest. My morning routine is 3 hours every Whoa. Morning. It is 3 hours. Yes. And you guys, I am a busy mom. I just finished homeschooling after 7 years. I run 3 different, businesses. I have a mentorship program. Like, I am busy, but my morning routine is 3 hours and I still have about 3-4 hours of family time that I can have every day. Time management, that's a whole other, topic that we can talk about, but some other time. But I mean, when you can own your time and use your time wisely, I am more busy now than I have been in my entire life. And yet I have more free time now, focused, intentional free time now than I ever had before. So that's a whole other thing. But anyway, having that morning routine is really important. And I would also argue to say that self-care is going to be giving you encouragement in your parenting. And to do that, you need to have these spaces of open communication with your child, or else you're just going to be sitting there all night fretting, having anxiety, turning over the reel of all of the stories you're making up in your head that 95% of them aren't true, but you're going to worry about them anyway. Mm-hmm. And so having set aside one-on-one time with each one of your kids every week is really important. Now, it doesn't have to be, and I'll just tell you how we do this in our family. So it's only about a half hour. And like I said, we have family time every day, but if you're all in the same room, that doesn't mean that you're having quality time. Mm-hmm. So actual one-on-one time in their room, take a walk, do something, go sit in the car, whatever, just have that one-on-one time and have the conversations, look in their eye. How are you? Oh, I'm fine. Okay, great. Awesome. So how are you really? So can you again, give me some more in depth there? What did you have going on this week? Get to know them, get to know their friends, get to know their relationships mm-hmm. with their friends, get to know mm-hmm. how they're feeling about certain subjects, what they're interested in, what excites them and puts them on fire. All of those things are really important. Then you can go to bed and you're like, oh, I actually have a much better feeling. I'm more connected. I'm more grounded with my child right now. And I know what's going on. I can sleep better. Right. So wow. Sometimes having that, family care, having that relationship care will then lead to better self-care. In our family, we have 4 kids. And so, every Tuesday and Thursday night, I take one child and my husband takes another, and then we swap the next week. So my kids know that every week they are going to have a one-on-one with a parent. And wow. They have, and like I said, my kids are 12, 14, 14, and 17, and they have grown to love these times and look forward to them. We miss them if we, miss a week or what have you. When it comes time to be 9 o'clock, we do it 9 to 9:30, and they're like, oh, it's one-on-one time. Come on up, mom, come on up, dad, whoever's room we're going in and whatever. And it's become this just, it's a great time. There's also been really hard conversations during those times sometimes, but there's still really, even if it's going to be a hard conversation, they still want it to happen. And that just shows how much of an outlet that they need. So,
oh my goodness. I like what you said. Even if it's going to be hard, they're not afraid. because they feel safe with you, right? And they know that you're not going to, you know, you are for them. You are for them. You want good for them. So they're not afraid of having those hard and difficult conversations. So, wow. So in a nutshell, right, over here, we believe that every week we want parents to take action on the information so they can get transformation, because and all of you guys know that this is who we are. We are intentional parents. We take action and unapologetically take action so that we can get transformation. So we, if you were to give us just one thing, one tip that parents can go and action and then begin to get the transformation, what would that be?
My favorite thing to say to parents, if they're just starting out, they're just starting to, you know, try to get this transformation, or they're trying a different direction, is all about power struggles. Mm-hmm. There is a huge dynamic with power struggles between parents and children. And, you know, children can think parents are up here and they're not really human. They're just the authority. Mm-hmm. And then parents can sometimes think, you're below me. You must listen to me and follow my everything I say. And they forget mm-hmm. their humanity, right? And they forget they're raising a person. Mm-hmm. And so I often say, when you're coming into a power struggle and you feel that tug, you just feel like we're like warring, right? And it can be silent. It can mm-hmm. be yelling, it can be whatever, but in a power struggle, there's two people or more, but everybody's pulling, right? So it's like a tug of war. So I just say, drop the rope, because one person can't play a tug of war, right? So drop the rope and pull up a chair. Just drop the rope and pull up a chair, get on their eye level, just sit. Sometimes you need to sit there and just be quiet for a while, saying, you know what? I don't want a power struggle. I don't want to argue with you. I don't want to feel this with you. I want to help you, because there's obviously something going on, or maybe there's something going on with you as the parent, mm-hmm. and say, you know what? I'm just going to sit here for a minute because I'm having a hard day today and I didn't mean to take it out on you, but I just need to sit here for a minute. And then you can apologize and you can tell them what's going on. But as long as you have that open communication, you can grow forward. No one can grow if everything is closed up, right? So mm-hmm. yes. So drop the rope, pull up a chair, and just start asking the questions, or start telling whatever's going on your heart. We're humans too, right? We're not just this authoritarian, you know, parent that has all the answers. Goodness knows we don't have all the answers, right? And so the more our kids can know that, and we can be open and honest and vulnerable with that, the more resilience we can build together as a family.
Wow. You guys, drop the broom and pull a chair. Right? I'm going to do that for myself. I mean, I know that I talk about self-regulation, especially as parents, regulating myself, being aware that this is getting tight. This is getting tight. This is getting tight. And what I do is I drop it. But what you have said, Nelly, is so practical, guys. This is the action we are going to be taking this week so we can get our transformation. Drop the chair. Drop the room and pull the chair. Yeah. What great advice. Please, let's do it. And then let me know. Let me know on the chat. Let me know on email. Let me know. Hit me up and let me know how it's going, because it's about us practicing. It's in practicing that we become masters in what we are doing. And we want, as leaders, we are learners, and that's why we are here anyway, to learn, because we are leaders and leaders are learners, and not just learners, we practice. Let us prove for ourselves these strategies, these skills. Let us prove it. Let's be our own scientists. Let us put those ideas into action and experience the transformation ourselves. So, Nelly, I am so delighted. I just want to ask, because I know I can feel this conversation is not ended. You've got so much to offer. So if our listeners, our valued intentional parents want to reach you and grab a hold of some more of your wisdom and some more of your programs, because I had loads of gems that you are dropping about power struggles, about being vulnerable as a parent, which is our strength, about truth and trust and connection. How can our people find you?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to connect with anybody and just send a message my way, or we can connect and talk more about how I can help you. But NellieHardin.com is where you can find everything. So NellieHardin.com. And then, so NellieHardin.com, and I'm on Instagram. I have a private Facebook community called the Family Architects Club. And that is for parents who are intentionally building, especially with their daughters during the second half of childhood, in order to equip them with that mental wellness before they leave home, and really strategic, practical ways. And then our mentorship program is called Map to Maturity. And so we have that and walk, it's a parent partnering program where we walk with the entire family through 3 months in order to really actually get the steps. And the whole last section is application, because like you just said, the biggest tragedy is when you learn something and put it on a shelf, right? We're learning something to use it. So.
Wow. You guys, so go to NellieHardin.com. And did you say Map to Maturity?
Yeah. Map to Maturity.
Map to Maturity. Is that your Facebook group?
No,
program.
Yeah, that's my mentoring program. The Facebook group is Family Architects Club.
Oh, the Family Architects Club. So, but just go to NellieHardin.com, and then I'm sure you'll be able to contact you and you know, grab a hold of you. Let's never stop learning, because like I always say to you, I'm always learning. I'm sure, Nellie, you're always learning, because we are leaders, and that's what leaders do. And today, we are coming to the end of this, you know, session. I want to go on, but I must stop, because I know we've got other things to do as busy parents. But I honor you so much for spending this hour with us, listening to us. And I'll just remind you, take action on that information so you can get transformation. And from all of us here at Raising Remarkable Teenagers, on today's tips, Tuesday tips for parents of teens, I'm gonna say bye for now, and we will see you in our next session. Bye bye now.